I didn't know. I knew it wasn't good because you could hear sirens going off, and we just waited, see what would happen, you know.
That's Army veteran Dean Gallagher, formerly of Murfreesboro, but now living in Anna, describing the beginning of the Tet Offensive on Tan Su Dun Air Base in South Vietnam, where he was stationed in 1968. In 68, he was a 24-year-old Specialist 4 with the 507th Transportation Company. And as I sit in the quiet, comfortable living room of his Anna home, along with his wife, Janet, the memories of 47 years ago are clear.
I was inducted. I was drafted and inducted on May 3rd, 1967.
And could you tell me how old you were when you were drafted?
24.
He was surprised that he was accepted because of his size. In fact, twice before the Army turned him down because...
I was small, you know, 5'5", you know, my weight was, what, 110?
But the third time, he was accepted, and he was concerned.
Well, I didn't think I would be in combat, but what bothered me was that I was small enough. What they had back then, ferrying out the Viet Cong, was Viet Cong was well known in digging tunnels underground and living under there. And what they would do, they called these people tunnel rats. You're small enough that you can get into the tunnels and dig around, and they would ferret out Viet Cong and try to find something that was left by them, some information they can use. And sometimes it could be dangerous because Viet Cong could be in there, and you get zapped, or they had devices in there that would blow up, booby trap. But that bothered me a lot, coming a tunnel rat. And, of course, it didn't happen. And I took my basic training at Fort Linderman, Missouri, for the Army, and took my AIT, Advanced Individual Training, at Fort Linderman, Missouri. And out of a group of about 25 or 30, two of us received orders to go to Nam. You know, because back then, you know, they have a dream sheet, you know, put down where you like to go after your training, you know. You want to go to Hawaii, you want to go to Los Angeles, or wherever you want to go, you know. And I put down Hawaii. Unfortunately, they overthrew me about 1,000 miles. You know, so the dream sheets didn't mean anything, you know. So we flew and arrived in Saigon, Tan Su Dun Air Base at night. And what a shock to see, you know, soldiers lined up along the roadside, you know, and at night, you know. And we were sent to Long Bend, at the processing area there. And when you get to Long Bend, 90% of your orders would be changed. Now, they had put me as a clerk in an aviation brigade. Now, I forget the company's name, but in an aviation brigade. But then my orders were changed, and I ended up in a transportation outfit at Tan Su Dun. And that's my job through the term of service there in Vietnam. I processed paperwork for cargo going in country. And I had to make sure that the cargo that was being shipped in country did not include ammunition and fuel at the same time. You couldn't do that. You know, it's dangerous, you know. It was a good job, you know, and you know, previously, you know, you had it so easy being in working in an office like that. But we had our times and we had our moments. We had some attacks on Tan Su Dun. We had some mortars fired at us, you know. We had to take cover and things like that. So it got hairy sometimes.
And on January 30th, 1968, things got hairy.
I read there were about 43,000 NVA Viet Cong at Tan Su Dun. The attack started about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was stationed across the flight line in the Air Force complex.
Before the well-coordinated widespread attack, intelligence had indicated that something was up.
We were on red alert for some sort of an attack, some sort of an aggression against us. You know, it came down through channels. And like I said, it came about 3 o'clock in the morning. I happened to step outside the building, and look far down the flight line, and you could see gunships, tracers going down. And they were coming in through the weakest point of the perimeter. And that's how I could tell that we were under attack. Now, the building we're in, they were surrounded by APs, which were Air Force police, just like military police, MPs. But our building was never touched, not at all. But we waited, and that's the tension on everybody, because you didn't know what was going to happen. I was on duty. We were on duty. That's where I worked in that department to process flights going in country. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, we had no flights going out, obviously, you know. And so there was a lieutenant and a major and lieutenant who had weapons on them. And, of course, unfortunately, our weapons, who we were working at that office at that time, was across the flight line at our main office. And we didn't have them.
So can I emphasize again, even though you were under red alert, your unit, at that time, you didn't have a loaded M16 on you?
I did not have, we had M14s then. And unfortunately, they were left across the flight line. Now, why we didn't have them, I do not know. I don't know. Okay. We just did not have them. I didn't know. I know it wasn't good because you could hear sirens going off, you know, and you could hear shooting. But it was, like I said, further down the flight line. And we just waited, see what would happen, you know. A scary situation until it got daylight, you know.
While the fighting at the main airbase in Saigon continued, the NVA and Viet Cong attacked many other areas, including the United States Embassy in Saigon, where, according to one account, our chief diplomat had to fight for his life.
Now, through the First Corps down to the Fifth Corps, which is from north to south, that's where the attack began, simultaneously at a certain time, you know. And downtown was attacked, the embassy was attacked, and the radio station, there was the Vietnamese Army headquarters was attacked. Other places in the Cholon district, that's a Chinese district of Vietnam, Saigon, that's where some of the heavy fighting was. NBC was the main thing that they tried to take over, and it failed. It blew a hole in one of the walls to get onto the grounds of the embassy, but they were all killed. There were security guards there, and one of the stories that I found out about was that I think it was Ambassador, they threw a weapon up to him because there was a Viet Cong in the building. One of the MPs threw up a weapon to him because he said there was a VC in there. And he spotted him, and he killed the VC.
And while the fighting continued on the Vietnamese peninsula on that day in 1968, over 8,000 miles away in Anna, Illinois, his wife Janet heard some very disturbing news on television.
Well, there was, and I don't want to mention any names, but on the national news, there was the story by the news anchor that there had been an attack in Saigon on Thon Son Nhut, and everybody on Thon Son Nhut had been killed. And a few days later, they said this was not true, that not everybody had been killed. But at that time, of course, my husband's on Thon Son Nhut. I hear that everybody's been killed, so I don't really know if he's dead or alive, but I'm assuming from that story that maybe he was killed. And of course, back then, there was no cell phones. There was very little communication other than the letters that we would write. And it would take 2 or 3 weeks sometimes for you to get a letter. So whenever I found out this news of Thon Son Nhut, I don't know if he's dead or alive. I haven't heard anything. And I'm thinking, okay, I haven't heard anything. Maybe if the Department of Defense doesn't show up in a black car at my door or with a cablegram, he's still alive. So this went on for about 2 months. Finally, I got a letter from him. I looked at the date on it to see when it was written, and it was written after the Tet Offensive attack. So I felt like, okay, he's still alive. And I know that today people have so much communication with people overseas that it's hard for them, be hard for them to realize that years ago, when your husband was gone, you didn't know anything for months. Literally, whether he was alive or dead in those zones. And I think people need to realize how fortunate they are now to be able to talk to each other daily or weekly when they're gone, because that means a lot.
Back on Tonsonut Air Base, the North Vietnamese made one tactical mistake, which allowed the Americans and their South Vietnamese allies to successfully repulse the attack.
Now, the trouble with the Viet Cong on Tonsonut was they knew how to get on, but they didn't know how to get off the base. They weren't familiar with it. And I think what I've heard now, and I can't confirm this, but what saved Tonsonut was that the NVA or Viet Cong did not blow the Binh Hoa Bridge. That's the link between Binh Hoa and Saigon, getting to Tonsonut. So the tank corps was able to cross the bridge and get into Tonsonut, and that's where they thwarted the attack. And then when daylight arrived, then we knew we were going to be okay because we saw the tanks coming in onto the flight line.
In the end, the Tet Offensive failed, although, according to numbers from the Military Assistance Command Vietnam, over 1,500 U.S. service members were killed, over 45,000 North Vietnamese Army and Viet Cong soldiers were killed. And in September of 1968, 24-year-old Specialist 4 Dean Gallagher left Vietnam for home.
By the grace of God, I survived it, and I got to live it out and serve my time in the States, and a few remaining months, you know, and just had a happy time with my wife right here in good old USA.
For WSIU Radio, I'm Kevin Boucher.